very full show today. I want to welcome everybody from all over the world, especially in, well, I'm going to let them tell you later, but I'll just say New Zealand and all of the islands all over the world. And may they be at peace, including the Marshall Islands and Puerto Rico. May the weather, may the humans make the weather not be as oppressive. Let's leave it at that. And to Squamish and Seychelles, New York, Manhattan's an island too, and Wyoming's not so much an island, but I send it out there too. And of course to us right here, happily surrounded by the Pacific Ocean, Columbia River, and wherever you may be. I've got a very full show, even though I've only got two guest spots. So do stay tuned. It's going to be a blast. And I'm going to bring my first guest in right now. And that would be Kathy Zeutlin, my good friend. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Carol.
Now, Kathy, you've been on radio before.
I have.
Have you been on KMUN before?
This is my first time here.
Kathy Zeutlin, my good friend from Portland, is a KMUN virgin, and she didn't even know it. Congratulations. She's also new, I believe, for the Astoria International Film Festival. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So Kathy is a filmmaker, has done a lot of work in a lot of areas. Tonight at 5 p.m., she will be showing her film, or rather the film festival will be showing her film, and she will be there in case you have, and you might, have questions or comments. And this is a very wonderful festival, and it's very eclectic. This year, the sort of theme is women in film. And that's all kinds of films. So I asked Kathy if she would come and tell us about her film and about the process. And when people say women in film, it's kind of like women in music. A lot of people think, well, a song with a woman's voice, that's women's music. And then there are those of us who think there's a lot more going on. So tell us a little bit about your film, Living While Dying. It's an evocative title.
This film came to me as a calling. I wasn't setting out with the film in mind, but I had been working on movies loosely under the heading of Holy Rascals. And I was making video about spirituality and transcending religion and going for the wisdom that that is the common thread of all spiritual traditions. Then my mother's partner got a terminal diagnosis. And I, for some reason, I don't even recall why, but I asked him if I could film him while he was in hospice. And his invitation to me was so open. He said, "Are you kidding? I would love it. I would love you to bring your camera. I'm a Leo. Come anytime."
I'm not sure what the Leo part has to do with
Well, the Leo part is I like to be, you know, in front of people.
I
want to share myself. And it gave him a project, actually. He was a project person. This was one more project that he could do from bed if he needed to. I mean, he still could get up and out of bed while he was in hospice, but he was one of the first things he actually did when he was given his hospice diagnosis was get a hospice bed and put it in his living room.
All right. Nice. Had you worked with dying people before in hospice or in any other way?
When my friend Ayla was in hospice, I invited her into my home. So I had had the experience of hospice in my own home, and we had a lot of, in my community, we had a lot of people coming in and out of our home during that period. I
right? To visit and to
help us take care of her, all of that.
And to make sure she was living while dying.
Yes.
Which I love that title because it just says it all. I've been a hospice volunteer for 20 years, so I felt like, yes, that's exactly the mission. And people say, well, it must be so depressing. And we say, not at all. No, it's an honor, and it's joyful, and there is so much gratitude involved, too, from the family, et cetera.
Well, so one of the things that became so clear to me while making my film is the importance of saying thank you, of gratitude, of saying I love you, of, you know, expressing love, and of asking for forgiveness and being forgiving. So those four things are important at the end of life, but of course that's an unpredictable event. When's the end of life? We don't know. It's so random. So therefore, those four things are every day. And so so the living is the important part because we're always living while dying.
From the time we're born, we're on a trajectory. That's true.
So it became a real call to how do I want to live?
So how did you figure out from this part, from your mother's partner, how did you go forth?
So the next thing that happened is I was doing a house exchange in Australia. And because I was working on Holy Rascals, my partner, Wendy Russell, says, well, you should find an Aboriginal elder to give us some wisdom about the end of life. Because we were starting to think about the end of life as an interesting topic within Holy Rascals. So we were looking for a Holy Rascal, and an Aboriginal elder sense.
Every time I hear you say Holy Rascal, I kind of chuckle to myself. Where did you come up with that name?
That actually came through Sister Jose Habde, who was a friend of Rabbi Rami Shapiro. And Rabbi Rami is a Holy Rascal. And one time he was giving a lecture, and she just jumped up in the back of the room and yelled it out at him. She said, Rabbi Rami, you are such a Holy Rascal.
I love it. Okay, so I did not know that. Great.
That's where that came from.
Right.
Anyway, I started doing research before my trip to Australia to see, was there anyone I could find within the Aboriginal community who would teach me about Aboriginal customs and attitudes and wisdom? And I was lucky to be introduced to Uncle Bob Randall. And then he invited me into his home for a few days and created a very beautiful ritual. You know, I'm part of Jewish renewal, and I want to say he's part of Aboriginal renewal. It's like bringing all that old wisdom up through himself into his life. And he had us get up at before sunrise. The ritual happened at sunrise, and it was into the all four directions, and it was very honoring of all the elements in the earth and life. And anyway, he did share with me his wisdom about the end of life. And people said, while you're in Australia, you have to meet Zenith. She's a death walker. And I was like, okay, I'd never heard of a death walker.
No.
And I got in touch with Zenith, and she invited me into her home. And she's in Byron Bay. And she had been basically called into her work as a death walker, which is being with people when they have terminal illness or being with them after death, being with families. She's a funeral celebrant. She's also a wedding celebrant.
Right. It's all part of life. Right. There you go. Yeah.
And so she's really was my very first teacher of that tradition, which is a newer tradition. A lot of people are now calling themselves death doulas, death midwives. It's kind of it's ancient tradition with new names of being with people and integrating death with life.
It occurs to me, I hadn't heard this before, but it occurs to me that part of this is taking the stigma out of the word death. Just as we have been trying to do for many, many years with various, the mental illness, whatever it is, and especially death. And I love that piece by the death and taxes guy, the comedian in your film.
Yeah, obvious.
But by quote, normalizing it since it is such a normal part
of life. It is so
normal.
It is, it's essentially part, it is part of our life.
Mm-hmm.
We're born and we die, and that is, you know, like so 100%.
Right.
And so to pretend that we don't die or
and,
to,
and then to
shut
fear.
It off and yeah. to fear it so much actually gives it a power it shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. So now just a little bit about process. When you're doing something like this, do you just keep filming as much as they will allow, and then comes the hard work of editing?
So, you know, this film had this organic unfolding, and after I had filmed Claire, after I'd been to Australia, I come home, and my good friend Vietz tells me that he has a terminal illness and gives me permission to film him. And so, yes, I did film people as much as I mean, he lived in another town, mm-hmm. as did Claire, so I wasn't always there, but mm-hmm. when I could make trips to Ashland from Portland, I would go there, and often, you know, Avietz would invite me to Ashland if he was doing a Shabbat dinner and the community would be gathering, or if there was something going on mm-hmm. that he thought, oh, well, this is film worthy. So what he, one of the very first things he did when he was told he had a terminal illness was start writing a comedy show. So
I love it.
That's he yeah. Yeah. performed this particular show three times, mm. and so I was there to film it all three times,
wow.
and then all before and after mm-hmm. and the rehearsals and many hours of him and his pool table, which he also decided, well, if I'm dying, I'm going to indulge in having a pool table before I go, and, and so there were many hours of that, and also flute playing was very important to him. He, you know, he was a person who really wanted to have as much life as he could, mm-hmm. Knowing that it was going to be short.
But your whole film is how long?
It's 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, you packed so much. So
the editing yeah. process is amazing.
Yeah.
I had 30 hours of film, and the editor said, send me your 10 best hours. So that's the first step okay. is... you just go through it all and watch everything and decide in, out, in, mm. out. Mm. And then when, you know, from there, I had very good fortune to work with an editor who was a great storyteller. Mm. And, you know, because I didn't know what my story was even going into editing. I didn't know that I would be the narrator, for instance. And by then, the way I'm telling you, it was first Claire, then it was Australia, then it was Avietz. That's now how the movie unfolds.
But that's not necessary. Okay, so it was fun. And how do you, now are all of the people, your friends and
yeah.
Claire who were dying, are they gone now?
Yes.
Did they get a chance to see the film at all? Or the,
no.
Not at all. Okay. But their families and friends.
They saw bits and pieces that I filmed. And I could, you know, put on YouTube for them before
right.
they had died, but they couldn't see the finished film.
Sure.
They were dead.
So you've been showing this film, though, on the East Coast. You've been all
and
over the country.
Mostly in
and
New England. I've had an opportunity to do one tour and now a second tour coming up in New England, and
mm-hmm.
I'll probably set up a California tour.
And you've done that here in Oregon
and
as well.
In so Oregon.
Delighted that you're here. And I know I saw one award that was written right there. So are there many films out on this subject? Is it becoming more?
Becoming way more a topic for filmmakers. I am seeing so many films on this subject.
Wow.
I ran a film festival about... it was called Death Talk Goes to the Movies, and we showed
nice.
One movie a month for 3 years, and we
wow.
never would run out of films. I mean, I could program that
wow.
forever.
Wow.
We just ran out of energy, but not out of films.
Well, this is good, because, as you know, I found that there were some people who had some resistance, and I understand. It's a little too close. We do that in the hospice world, too. If you're in the midst of grieving, you usually step back for a little bit. Right. So some people.
And there's no way around grief being part of death. I don't think there is. I don't think there should be. You know, just like, and that's not something that you want. So it's really hard to look at it sometimes. It is. It is really hard. But it shouldn't be taboo. It just has to be hard. That's a difference.
And then to see also the joyful part of it.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the allowance of the grief creates the allowance of the joy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm delighted you're here again. My guest is Kathy Zeutland from Portland, a filmmaker, and lots of other things I might add from Portland. And she is going to be opening the film festival. This is the Astoria International Film Festival that begins with Kathy's film at 5 p.m. this evening. All the films are at the Liberty Theater, which is on 12th and Commercial. You can go to either of these websites if you want to see all of the films. We can run through the names of the films, but let me just tell you, the website for the film festival is GOAIFF, Astoria International Film Festival, .com. GOAIFF.com. Or you can go directly to libertyastoria.org and buy your tickets there too. So you can get, there are specials for the entire festival, or you can get tickets for specific ones. You can also get tickets at the door. So after Kathy's film, there will be a break of, I think, 30, 40 minutes, during which time will you be available for
people?
Oh, yeah. Great.
Oh, yeah.
And then 6:30 is In Her Blood, and you can look on the web to find out what these are about. Tomorrow morning, 11 a.m., Passion and Power, and that's the orgasm one. That's all I'm going to say, folks. Actually, Ron Craig was here last week, and he kind of gave 1 p.m., The Girls in the Band, which is quite well-known by a lot of people. 3 p.m. is Equal Means Equal, and after that one, there will be a panel discussion, and that's really good. I've been for several years. At 6:30 is My Hero, RBG. Yes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes.
It's a documentary, and I have seen it, and it is excellent and fun, and I think we all need it. And that's all on Saturday. And then on Sunday, 12:30 is Anita, 2:30 Eloquent Nude, and 4 p.m. is a classic, The Women. So some of these have been here before. A lot of them have. Some of them have not. And I highly recommend this festival. I feel Astoria is very fortunate to be able to have this. And as you know, the Liberty Now is live theater. As a matter of fact, last night we had Dancing with the Clatsop County Stars. It was a blast. Every one of them was terrific. That's the locals. Of course, the professionals were too. So check this out, libertyastoria.org or goaiff.com, or just come on over for the 5 o'clock film, Living While Dying, with Kathy Zeutland, and then find out everything else that's happening for the weekend. Anything else we need to tell folks, Kathy?
No.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming in. Okay. And I'm going to put a little music on by Gene Mann, who is going to, actually, if you were lucky, you heard her on Albert's folk show this morning, and she is going to be at the Hoffman at 7 o'clock this evening. Thanks for being here, folks. KMUN Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook.
Song. story, it's loud in the spray of the shore. With an ear pressed to a seashell, an echo echoed in true. As a molting crab, you rid your shell, while plant leaf drops on the sill. Making room for new blue. You wave goodbye to the useless dirge and the last vestige of gloom. All you had to do was wait until you grew a new armor. With the grace of a butterfly, free of her cocoon, like flower petals in the sky. You carry a sleep and roll down to the beach, and all on your own, and you lay in the sand, and you sleep and pretend it's your home. Your castle by the seashore, a view out every window. For me and you. Storm and you grab your pail and go
home. Was Gene Mann, and Gene is again going to be at the Huffman this evening at 7 p.m. Oh, that's nice. This is my copy. It's for Carol. And this is our 2018 release, Road Girl. We heard View Out Every Window. Gene is... For several years, she was our only woman tenor guitar gathering person. So she called all the guys her boyfriends. It was really cute. And she also played completely differently from everybody else, as you can hear. They were playing jazz and bluegrass and folk and dance music, and Jean is writing her own music in tuning her tenor guitar differently and everything, and everybody got along really, really well. So now, today, it's a little reminiscent of those days because, two, four, six, oh, okay, this isn't quite as bad. When they hear... I've had 9 tenor guitar players in this room at one time. I have now 6 clay artists. They did not bring their wheels or their sculptures here, though, because that would be impossible. We have 1 guitarist. All of them sing, and I'm hoping that will have some of that at some point. And I want to be able to see everybody. So welcome.
Hi.
Hey, bring that microphone closer so you can, yeah. You might want to share that one. And actually, last week, we had a teaser with three of the guests who are here now. And let's see, we had Carla.
Hello.
And you got to get close to the mic.
Hello.
No, and then she gets close and then whispers, oh, wise guy. Okay, they've been here for a couple of weeks now, so, you know, they're in the mode, but I have a feeling.
Back asleep.
Yeah, when you're going to be getting home soon, though. We won't talk about that because we don't want you to leave, and I don't know how you feel about it. So Carla was here, and Dottie, and Rhonda. They were all here last week for a really fast interview where we got some of the information. And now, in addition to them, we have we and Pairo.
Kia ora.
Okay. Oh, there she goes. Kia ora. I'm writing that down. Sorry. Kia ora. That means hi or hello. Is that it? Or
yes, it's a greeting.
A greeting.
Yeah. It can also mean thank you.
Oh, good. Oh, that's helpful. That's very handy. And Bea is over there with the guitar. he speaks as well. And he has been, Bea, you have been on the air on, right here in this
right
very
here.
Room.
Yes.
In past years.
One year, yeah.
Once, maybe
yeah.
3 years ago probably, yeah. In 2015. So the two newbies are actually Pairo and we, right? Am I right? You two have...
You're right, and I'm the youngest.
She wants to make sure to say that. Wait a second. Are you implying that he might be the youngest?
Okay, so here we go. So in terms of Ngā Kaihanga Uku and the founding members, I'm the youngest one, and I quite like being referenced as the youngest because... while I age, I stay young.
Well, this is curious because I don't even know when she speaks, whether she's serious or not.
Right.
Exactly, because you notice that last sentence was almost a Zen Koan, she said. As I age, I stay young. I'm going... Okay. Right. Well, it could be true. I think you're all young at heart because you're still creating full time. So our guests have been here for over 2 weeks. You did a 2-day workshop. Who were you working with in the workshop?
So we had a 2-day workshop out at the Clatsop Community College, which is a amazing place, and you should all go there and check it out if you haven't been there. So me, Carla, I did some demonstration sculpture. Bay Riddell also did some demonstration sculpture. He also had a presentation on Ngā Kaihanga Uku, which is our collective Māori artists. Clay group.
That's why I'm letting them say this, as you know. Okay.
And we also had Rhonda heading the community art project that the group has created with the rest of the community.
Beautiful project.
We did a demonstration as well. Pairo did a demonstration as well. Dottie also, all hands on board, everyone, Todd and Karuna. We're actually all quite in there. We should have had 2 weeks, really. 2 weeks workshop.
Instead of 2 days. Yeah. Absolutely. That's crazy. You have there's so much. Were you all working separately, or was this all everybody in the same room, or what did you do? Because last time, maybe in 2015, there were a whole bunch of different workshops presented. I remember I took a printmaking workshop.
Last time, we had... people working in one room and people working in another room. Actually, there were three rooms. And Eddie Dalton was with us at that time too.
Right.
So people could move from one sort of area to work with a potter on the wheel in one room. They could move into another room and do mask making. Mm-hmm. Colleen Ehrlich right. was kind of leading that. And then in the other room, there were a couple of other sort of stations set up and demonstrations happening all at the same time.
Yeah.
So we sort of did a something similar to that this time.
Oh, you did?
A little
okay.
bit, yeah.
Okay. I missed that whole thing. I didn't even realize this was happening. I found out you guys were coming and I jumped on it and said, you got to come in and do radio. We have to share you with the world here now, because we are streaming to the world at this point, including, and how do you say New Zealand?
Aotearoa.
Yeah. Aotearoa. Say it one more time slowly.
Aotearoa.
Aotearoa. Okay, well, we'll work on it. Next time you come back, I'll have it down really, really well. So, and then they did a presentation that I did go to just the other day. That would have been Wednesday at the College Art Clay Room with Richard Rowland. And we saw slides and heard a little bit about each person's, where they came from, what part of Aotearoa, and I'm working on it. Okay, we'll see. And then saw some of the work, and the work is quite diverse in many ways. And then also the gift that they have created to give to this community, which I'm not sure where it's going to be in the end, but we'll let folks. Do you know where it's?
Hopefully it's. It's going to hang up at the Clatsop Community College. Yeah, we've left it with Richard and for him to decide where that might go there.
We'll
yeah.
have to figure that out. So I would like to hear first, if you don't mind, unless you need to warm up more, I wonder if I heard you sing a song the other day on Wednesday. Would that be possible for you to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What was the name of that song, Carol?
On Wednesday.
No, I have it in my computer. I took a picture of it. You know, I didn't memorize it, though.
Okay.
What is the name of it?
Ngā Iwi E.
Ngā Iwi.
Ngā Iwi E.
Ngā Iwi E.
Oh, that's
you have to
close.
Hold your mouth in the right
place. It's people.
Yes. People, oh, that people. Means people.
That means people, yes.
Okay.
People. And
And where did this song come from?
The song was, I believe it was composed by Hirini Melbourne. I could be wrong there. But it's about, the first verse is about, is a call to people of the Pacific to unite. And I think that call needs to be reinforced and to go out in these times.
Absolutely.
For the people of the Pacific to unite, the common people, the everyday people, the people with heart, the people with soul, to unite around the Pacific. And the second verse is about women. Women, stand up, stand, be strong. So it's a call to our women folk, an encouragement to our women folk. Third verse is to the men, tamatū. Tama toa, so stand up, men. So be warriors in the most honourable sense of the word. For us, we have a warrior culture, which is based on honour, integrity, courage, bravery, protection of the family and community, and so on.
God, we could use some of that right now, couldn't we? In this world of ours, yeah.
Discipline, all those attributes of warriorship. So men stand up. The third verse is to kia mau ki te mana motu hake, which means to hold on to our sovereignty, however we interpret that, whether it's our sovereignty as a nation, as a community, as a family, in our homes, our individual personal sovereignty, all of those aspects of sovereignty. And, yeah, so that's what the song is about.
Mm-hmm.
want to dedicate this song to Tony Johnson and Don, who really loved it the other day when we sang it at the luau. Ngā iwi e, ngā iwi e, ki a kotahi rā te mana nui a ki wā. Ngā iwi e, ngā iwi e, ki a kotahi rā te mana nui a ki wā. E,
wahine ma, maranga mai, maranga mai, kia kaha. E ia, ie. E ia, ie.
E tamama, tamirwha.
E tamama, tamatu, tamato. Tama ora, e tamama, e tamama, tamatu, tamato, tama ora, e ia, ie, e ia, ie,
kia mora.
Kia mora, ki te mana motu hake me te aroha. Kia mora, ki te mana motu hake me te aroha. He ia.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah, and so singing is an important part of the culture as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, music of all kinds. And do the children come up singing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's part of the families.
Sing one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the children's ditties that you all learn when you... Yeah, she's poking the youngest person in the room. Pairo, come on. You know, you got credit for being the youngest, although I'm still wondering, you know, in mind and body. I would like to know a little bit, coming from or carrying on from what Bay was saying about the culture, and I wanted to ask I think these guys have had quite a time here. They're probably all totally exhausted. I think you fly out tomorrow. Uh-huh. Is that right? Yeah, yeah. Early. You have to leave here early because you have a museum and a shop and all these things. You're not wasting any time. I hope you get a vacation when you get home at least, because this has been really intense. But I was sitting with you at the luau, and you were talking a little bit about the culture, and I wonder if you would be willing to just say what anything you want. And remember, everybody pitches in. Just jump on a microphone and say what you wish. So,
well, for a start, even with the song that we sung, getting rhythm, dexterity and things like that. And as Bay alluded to, that we're a warrior culture, and all these songs at different tempos and everything like that help us towards being that, to being able to grow up looking after ourselves and defending ourselves. But one of the things is that, we're one of the very few countries in the world that don't have to go to war. The only time we've been conscripted is in the First and Second World War. Most of the others, all the others after that, have been volunteers. And during the British invasion of trying to, or taking Māori land, that's where a lot of the that's where they learnt a lot about jungle warfare and things like that, trench and fighting in trenches and things like that.
I remember you mentioned that.
Yeah,
the Māori were the first to develop that. Can you say that
far as I can. Well, because we took we lived on the hills and that. That's where our fortifications were. So it was just like when sometimes we would be on patrol in Vietnam, and you'd be walking on a hill, and you'd be thinking about this, and you're walking on rocks, and then all of a sudden one of the boys would spot a bamboo. So we'd throw a smoke grenade down there, and up would come the smoke out of all the vents that went down there.
Right.
Unlike with us, is that they might attack, and during the night under the darkness, they always had a way out, and we could get out and.
Because you knew the path too.
Fight another day, and. For the last 180 years, we've been fighting, and for our rights, and that is starting to turn, where we are now getting our land back.
Really?
Our,
wow.
Yes, and we are getting the tribal areas are getting a substantial amount of money. Not that it's going to cover everything.
Yeah.
But at least they've got to recognise it for what it was worth, It's just not a pushover.
And so is this all over the island of Aotearoa?
Yes.
Aotearoa?
Yeah.
Aotearoa.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
The three, it's the North Island, the South Island, and there's a couple of small islands on the outskirts of that. But yes, they're all included in this this payout. And I think that it's like here, with the Indigenous people, and that I believe that the tribal council around here, this area, is in court with the
federal government.
With the government at the moment.
Yeah.
And of course, we're going to leave some work behind to be raffled off to help that fight.
Oh, nice. And well, I'm wondering, the art that you folks are creating. Is that a mixture of traditional work and your own? Because you all live in, not all of you, but you're spread out around the whole land in different places, but you come together as a community of clay artists. Are there other communities of visual artists or theater artists or in the Maori community?
Yep, there is. There has been. In the north, there's a group called Taitokiro Māori Artists Collective. There's other groups growing.
Are these fairly recent, though? Because you mentioned 180 years. Mm. And I'm just wondering whether stuff's been percolating. Of course, here it's 500 years, but, you know, in the Americas, that things were taken.
Certainly, the 70s was quite a significant time in... for Māori, in that there was an increased level of political activism. So that was a reclamation of Māori culture because, you know, we came through a period of urbanisations where Māori moved from the lands into the cities for jobs and that sort of thing. And, there was a significant period where Māori were assimilating, trying to assimilate and to assimilate their children to get the best of both worlds. And of course, it was actually totally disastrous. So the 70s saw a period of major political activism, and that song Ngāwi Iwi Ia is very much an activist song. And so out of that time came language nests were created. So that was a significant way of reclaiming culture, was to be able to speak the reo. So there are generations of young children who are adults now who are fluent in the Māori language. So whereas for myself, it wasn't something that we were taught at school. It was optional at high school. And even then, there weren't the resources there to be able to make that real for...
So were there enough native speakers still alive and knowing the language that they were able to...
Well, they were the movers behind establishing language nests. And, of course, within that, because you ask, the question between is always brought up, if identifying a difference between traditional and contemporary. And you'll often find that classically trained Māori artists will say, well, from tradition comes contemporary, and contemporary soon becomes tradition, and that's how, you know, society grows and evolves, and that's certainly how our art forms evolve. So for me, I'm certainly informed from our classical art forms, and I prefer to call them classical art forms rather than traditional, because traditional kind of ties it into a box. And often when you look at, you know, the finest of our works, we can't duplicate that because they were at the ultimate peak of an art form. So what can we do with that? We can, you know, use that as information in which to explore further with the materials that we have available. So certainly there's younger generations of Māori who are fluent speakers, who are trained and understand where they're from, who are now using contemporary medias to go for it, so digital media, film. Mm-hmm. So
in terms of movement and Māori arts, back in the 70s, there were a group of Māori who were keen to get together, and they created a group called Ngāpuna Waihanga, or Māori Artists and Writers Society. We in Bay might be able to talk more about that group.
It was, the first generation was people like Paramatcha, Cliff Whiting and so forth, mm-hmm. generation sort of, one step older than I. And out of that, they asked those of us who were working with clay at the time to do workshops. And the annual conference of Ngāpuna Waihanga, which means wellsprings of creativity, was held over a weekend, one of our holiday weekends in Aotearoa, and it was never long enough for us as clay artists, because our processes Take a little more time.
Well, that's one of the things I'm wondering, because I know we witnessed at the luau that process, and it only took 4 hours or something. But some of this goes for a very long time. So how
So some of the processes. So we decided to come together for a 10-day long gathering in order to share techniques and resources and knowledge and so forth, and to kind to decide what form we would take as a group, as a very few of us at that time. And so we came together, and basically out of that, Ngā Kaihanga Uku was formed.
When was that?
That was in 1987.
And so, 30 years ago.
Yeah, so, and so basically we've been going ever since,
And how do some of you younger folks, I don't know, you all look the same age to me.
I think I'm actually the youngest. I'll just put that out there.
I know, Carla. That's why I was laughing.
Me, Dottie, and Rhonda are the same age.
Oh, okay.
We're 21 today.
Oh, well, congratulations. It's nice of you to celebrate it here with us.
Thanks.
But how did you, what do you do? You just put the word out and maybe... like with the trenches where you the smoke comes out so you know how to circulate. How do you communicate so that people all over the country...
Oh, by email.
What was that?
By email. We've given up sending runners with sticks.
That classical, traditional... Yeah, I'm sure.
But over time, we've met up. I started meeting with Indigenous people in Santa Fe, and some of them had come over to New Zealand, so it's been backwards and forwards between us across the Pacific for quite some time, and it's just not something that's been born over the last 2 or 3 years. It's been here for quite a while.
Right.
There was another festival up at Evergreen, where the carvers of both tribes got together and developed a house for the weavers, and that was last week.
Opening
last Saturday at Olympia at Evergreen State College
at the Longhouse.
Yeah, I remember you guys were going up on Saturday. I didn't know what it was for. That's pretty exciting. What about, is there a connection with folks in other parts of the world as well?
Yes. Everywhere we're going to take over the world.
Well, it's what's so exciting is to see people coming together in a constructive way and creating and expressing and teaching the young, which is one of the saddest parts when the young don't learn and then life is sort of hanging out and not happening. You all have different backgrounds, in many ways, both your families as well as your art backgrounds. But I wonder if any one of you wants to speak. You've been very quiet. I noticed you're staying away from the microphone, Rhonda.
Oh, these guys can talk much better than I can.
Well, I'm curious if some of you would talk about where the creation, for example, specifically of clay art. Now, I know for Bay, it's... Is it sort of 50-50 for you, music and clay, or is it...
I sort of don't really take percentages anymore. It's just when I can get time to do one or the other or both of them. Yeah. What was your question?
But you always carry your guitar. You always have a guitar.
Not when I go to bed, no. My wife draws the line at that.
See what the folks listening don't realize is that when we start to laugh in here, that's what most of the time we're doing. These guys have been brought a lot of expression of joy through the work and just through the stories, and also just hanging out together, because you don't get together that frequently, do you? No. All of you in your group?
We live all around the North Island, actually.
Yeah.
On average, about once a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to come visit, and then you all have to come together, and so I can see you all at one. Either that or just bop around. So tell me how Clay became your means of expression, your chosen means of expression. Yes. Bring the mic.
In 98, when my youngest, my son went to school, I decided that what did I want to do all day? I had to go and do something. And so I went back to school and started learning art. And at the North Tech, they only were teaching printmaking or clay. So I'd always been artistic. I was born an artistic person, but clay was introduced to me really then. I'd played with it before, and as a kid, put clay onto the old portable radio
stereo
nice. And tried to throw a little pot on that when I was about 11.
I think we better watch out for her here at the radio station. So
it sort of started from there, and it just a beautiful medium to work with, 3D form. You can move it, manipulate it, hold it, change it, and it can turn into something beautiful.
Wee, how about you?
What happened was basically was that I worked in a prisons, and I used to use art, Māori art, as a medium and to counsel or things like that. But then I was invited to go down to a boys' home. And I ran the prison part of it. And these kids were, they weren't kids, they were men in the way they thought, and they didn't give a damn about it. So rather than use chisels, I started going to clay on a Monday night. What I learned on a Monday night, I teach them on a Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
So
good for you.
It was, their concentration span was a blink.
Yeah.
But we found that that their concentration span started to lengthen. So then that's when I started to employ, I employed a music guy that played a trumpet, and and he taught them music, and he also was a volunteer in the ambulance and the fire brigade. So I got him to use first aid, and because they were all blood and guts sort of guys, they loved he could explain like the bones sticking out of the leg and that, and what you would have to do and tourniquet and. So that's how I basically got into clay.
Interesting. Does anybody, you know what? We have 1 minute left. I'm listening to some wonderful music here. You can't hear, but the audience can behind us. Anybody else want to tell a story? Or Bay, you want to play something? Is there another song?
Just to give some background, part of the reason why we're here was to, Richard invited us to name the kiln.
Oh, yes.
And so we came up with a name, Te Ahikaro, which means the long burning fire. And he also wanted to dedicate the memory of that kiln or to Manos Nathan and Colleen Ehrlich,
yes,
who were two of our founding members who passed away.
And who were here in Astoria.
And so basically this song says, fly my clay, fly to the world. And fly my song, fly to the world. Fly, let the life essence go out to the world. Let our life essence of creativity go out to the world, te Māori ora. And then finally, let the dreams and visions emerge from the place of potential through the place of birthing to the world of light. So that's basically what the song says. I'll sing it in one minute.